Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about Presto, the distributed database that can query multiple sources at scale. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned. Floss Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 577, recorded May 6th, 2020. Presto. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. Give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might want to download and play with right after the show. I think this one's going to be more of the latter, so we'll see. It's kind of crazy that way. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Randall, and congratulations on making it back to your home base from the depths of Mexico, which is where you were last time I saw you. I'm here in Southampton, where the sky is blue, the air is above freezing, and the cat is happily outdoors because she doesn't freeze to death when she goes out.
And the children are above average.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. You wait till we get down to the gefilte fisk.
Right, exactly. So I am and will be for the conceivable future in my home. So I'm in. I have a home in Beaverton, Oregon. I rent a room from my friend Ken, and I will be here because I have nowhere I can go. I can't go back to Tijuana for any conceivable future because they closed down all the tourism, and I'm technically a tourist. Even though I'm a resident, I still count only as a tourist. The good thing about this is every show is going to be done with this wonderful Blue Yeti. So, and my settings will remain the same from week to week. Instead of having to keep switching them back and forth. So that'll be nice because when I pulled it up this morning, it was all Yeti Nano because it was all the stuff for, being in Tijuana. So today we have a really interesting project. I've been looking forward to this one for at least a little while. It's Presto. Presto is basically, a distributed SQL engine that can talk to various backends, multiple backends, like S3 and actually, you know, glom onto a Postgres database, the data files for it, or actually maybe it just uses the SQL Postgres interface. MySQL for sure, it's able to look at the actual files. And you can do these joins and these queries over multiple sources at once and have the query distributed. At least this is my understanding. We'll find out if I'm totally wrong and from our guests in a few minutes. But it's going to be interesting. It seems rather innovative because it's also, it looks like it's a multi-master even for write. So that could be really interesting, unless it's query only. Maybe it's query only. Maybe I mistake that when I was looking at the stuff. So anyway, what do you know about this so far, Simon?
I know almost nothing about this. My contact with the database world has been somewhat peripheral, despite being the CEO of the MariaDB Foundation for a while. Really, I'm not much of a database guy. I do know Dane, though, from many years ago. And so I'm interested to see how this is the evolution of all the lessons Dane learnt back at JBoss and starting Apache Geronimo and back in those days. It looks interesting. It's got there's a foundation looking after the source code. There's a service company that seems to be paying the engineers. So I'm looking forward to digging into the governance and the business models.
Of course, which you're always great at. And we're going to be bringing Manfred Boser and Dane Sundstrom on in a moment to talk about this. But before we do that, I have a very important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. CashFly is a CDN that has been innovating content delivery since 1999. They are now bringing you 100% Cash Shield. With this new feature, you will benefit from a drastic reduction in data transfer fees with AWS's S3 and other cloud storage origins by increasing your cash hit rate to 100%. Consumers expect 4K content instantly delivered at any time on any device, anywhere in the world. It's time to step up. Whether it's your web page loading, your video buffering, or your games downloading, you just need to be faster. You can't do that when your cached items are being evicted for large one-off requests costing you a fortune in data transfer out fees. With 100% Cash Shield and CashFly's guaranteed availability, there is now a simple way to avoid this. 100% Cash Shield is the next generation content delivery solution for today and tomorrow, and is a dedicated storage space just for you. Keep your data and content closer to your customers without the traffic of other companies. You can purchase as much space as you want, and your data is fetched from the 100% Cash Shield rather than from your origin. Shielding reduces your origin spend by thousands per month, guaranteeing no cache misses. It will also remarkably improve your download speeds with no buffering. And they give you guaranteed availability with the highest quality of service. Easily and reliably scale your video streaming to reach global audiences of any size. Get hyper-fast download speeds, low latency, and a scalable solution for gaming. Your podcast will be delivered quickly and reliably without delay or timeouts, and receive lightning-fast digital download speeds for large digital files, no matter where your customers are. CacheFly's global throughput performance dominance ensures that any cache misses are delivered 5 times faster than from your origins. Just for Twit listeners, CacheFly is giving away a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. See if you're overpaying 20% or more for CDN. Learn more at twit.cachefly.com. That's twit.cachefly.com. And we thank CacheFly for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring these guys on. So I got the wrong screen up. Wrong screen up. Hide that. Hide that. Come on, hide. There we go. Manfred Moser, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome everyone.
Hi, sorry for the delay there. Yes, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm from Victoria, British Columbia, so I'm not too far away from you now that you're not in Mexico.
Yeah, so I'll wave in your general direction. It's sort of over that way.
I think it's that way.
Yes, it's northish from here. So exactly. You're in the country I can no longer go to. I can't go to Canada or Australia because they don't let felons in. So they are pretty much blocked off. I can go everywhere else. I've been to 62 countries, but I can't go to Canada or Australia now. So it's life.
That's a shame.
It's the result of a misspent youth, I guess. a little bit of craziness when I was younger. And let's also go ahead and bring on Dane Sundstrom. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Palo Alto. It's really nice here today. It's going to be in the 80s Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in, UK weather. Or Canadian. No,
they're used to translating. They're used to translating. They know what that means. They know what AD feels like. And so a wave in the general direction of Palo Alto. That's sort of that way, sort of southish, southeastish actually, because it's the coast kind of peels in. All righty. So let's go ahead and start with Manfred. And give us the 30,000-foot view. What problem are you solving when you reach for Presto?
So your description was actually very good. Presto is what's called a distributed SQL query engine. So there's two aspects to that. One is the SQL support. So basically anything you want to query on the underlying data sources with Presto can be done with the SQL query language. So rather than having some sort of query language that's different again for your different database. All the different databases connected support SQL. So you can hook up Elasticsearch or Kafka or Cassandra or very commonly Hive data stores like S3 or any of those sort of cloud object storage systems. And you hook them all up to Presto and query them all with SQL, which automatically means that you can use all the tools you're used to, right? Like you can use your SQL knowledge you already have as a business analyst or some sort of a programmer or so. And you can use all the dashboarding and business intelligence tools that make nice fancy reports and, you know, charts and all that kind of stuff. So it's very useful in that aspect. The second part beside is the distribution. And that means that Presto is not a database. It just is a query engine, which means can query all the connected databases, and it does that in a parallel fashion. So rather than having one server that queries the database, it can analyze the SQL query, break it up, and query the database via many nodes. So large clusters in large user organizations have literally thousands of servers in a cluster that all hammer the databases that they're connected to, and pull out petabytes of data sometimes in queries and have lots of ongoing users. So it scales very much. So it basically solves the problem of querying the data where it lives, so in the object storage or in the database, rather than trying to build a data mart like often in the past when organizations had to do the analysis of that data. They needed to pull all the data out and make what's called a data mart, and that's very expensive and complicated, and then you need storage again. With Presto, you kind of can work around that.
Yeah, and what's your relationship to the project?
I've been watching the project from the side for quite a while, joined the project as a committer and contributor about half a year ago, and in the last couple of months I worked very hard on getting the Frog book out, which is the new Presto the Definitive Guidebook that is now available from O'Reilly, and that hopefully lines up Presto as one of the well-known technologies that has an animal book like the camel book for Perl or whatever else.
Yeah, camel book, llama book, alpaca book, pecunia book. Yeah, those are all Perl books. Definitely cool. How did this project get started?
It started 2012 at Facebook. Dane would know all about that. And it solved exactly that problem for Facebook, where they had to query very large object storage and the existing technologies. Hive and others weren't just fast enough, and Presto was dedicatedly developed to solve that problem of having many, many users querying lots and lots of data without having to build a data mart, essentially.
So, Dane, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, we started this back in 2012. Basically, there was a small team of four of us charged with building an interactive query system for the data that we kept in our Hive. We had HDFS. The problem is that we had all these analysts at Facebook, and they would go to do analysis of data, and the analysis would take hours. So a analyst is like, the very famous quote in the Hadoop community is, "Hey, a good day is when I get to run 7 queries." And that isn't quote from one of the analysts we had at Facebook. So we have these super expensive people sitting there getting almost nothing done. And so we at Facebook, there was another system that someone had built at a hackathon that kind of showed that you could do fast analytics, but the system wasn't really wasn't designed to be maintained. It was kind of like a hackathon grade thing. I and Martin Traverso, David Phillips, and Eric Wong started working on this. I have a deep background in distributed computing. So I built the execution engine. Martin and David have experience with doing languages and compilers and stuff like that. So we built everything from the ground up, you know, parsing, analysis, query planning, execution, everything except for we reused tons of the distributed computing stuff that, from Java, which is my background.
Okay, cool. And so, see, this started at Facebook in 2012. Was that before or after December 21st?
We started in like August. Okay. I remember.
So you're optimistic. You're optimistic that December 21st wasn't going to be the end of the world then.
Oh yeah. Right.
So what's are you on the architecture then, or are you deep into the coding of it, or are you more of a project manager now?
So for like the first like 4 years of Presto, I mostly did the coding with the other folks. Most of Presto was built by a fairly small team. I think, you know, the vast majority was built by maybe 10 people or so. And then as I've grown, as the project has grown, I do a lot more on like telling people how things work, doing code reviews, working on just like really, really complicated things that have to be refactored, things like that. But not super deep into coding right now.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, sometimes it's, you're kind of done coding. So, I can totally understand that. I think Simon has a few questions.
Sure. So Dale, I'm digging around the foundation here. So this is how did this code end up getting handled in terms of copyrights? Looks like it now has a CLA that benefits the Presto Software Foundation, but I'm guessing this was all Facebook's code originally. Did they make a software grant or what?
So from the very first day we started working on the project, I mean, I have a strong open source background and some of the other people who started the project. We sat down with the management team and they wanted us to build this. And my first requirement was, that's great, but we have to do this all open source because I hate building stuff multiple times. And this is going to be a huge project. And that very much aligned with what Facebook wanted. They wanted to disrupt the data warehousing industry. So from the beginning, from like, you can actually go look in the history and see the first commit. We designed the software to be open sourced from the beginning. And it's been open sourced under the Apache license. We opened it up like 6 months after we started, maybe nine, something like that. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, I'm looking at it now, and it looks like the copyright probably belongs to the Presto Software Foundation. I want to ask you some questions about in a moment.
Oh,
so I'm guessing that originally it belonged to Facebook, because I see on GitHub that the CLA was originally the Facebook CLA that would have given them the copyright. So presumably at some time Facebook said, hey, guys, take this, spin it out, do good with it.
The copyrights are owned by whoever wrote the code. I mean, this is a Apache licensing model. So no one's collecting the actual copyrights on this. At the end of the day, Facebook owns most of the copyrights, although all the code's licensed under the Apache license. The recent work has Facebook doesn't participate in the open source project anymore. So all the new stuff for the past year is owned by the individuals have been contributing or the companies they work for.
Right. And so now the foundation that you've got there, is that, have you modeled that on Apache, or do you, or is it more heavyweight than that? You know, is there an executive director and a staff, or is it just a shell to control the process?
It's lighter than Apache is today. It's closer to like how Apache was like, I don't know, 20 years ago or so, where really it's there. The foundation is there to manage the licensing, because you need to have an entity on the other side of the CLAs. It's the actual process of what's going on in the project is managed by the maintainers.
Right. So what is the foundation? I was clicking around on the website trying to find out if it was a C3 or if it was a California corporation or what. What's the legal structure here?
It's a nonprofit corporation in Delaware. Right. It's not a 501c or 501 of any kind yet. The project basically requires no money to run. So there's the only reason to go through that work of getting one of those designations is really to provide more. More guarantees to the community around like what the actual corporation is doing.
Yeah.
The tax benefits aren't a big deal because almost the only thing we pay for is Slack right now, which is not particularly expensive. So,
right. We also talk about Rocket Chat. The foundation sounds like it's very lightweight indeed. It sounds like, in fact, you would be better off docking it at some other corporation and not having to go through all the pain of doing that, but like make it a part of Software Freedom Conservancy or of SPI or something.
Yeah, we looked at a ton of different foundations, and a lot of them came with like baggage. So like, I love the guys at Apache, but they run projects in one very specific way. And that mm-hmm. really wasn't how we've been running the project for the previous 7 years. And some of the other ones, they provide some value, but not a lot. And it wasn't particularly difficult to spin up a foundation for this, given that our expectation is that the foundation isn't going to do much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the only reason for anchoring it somewhere is so that it can't do much, because the concern about these things is never what you're going to do to it. It's what the people who come after you are going to do to it. And that's why you put in place, rock solid governance, and you anchor it to an immovable object rather than because of what you want right now.
Well, the Presence Software Foundation was only founded in, like, I think early 2019 or late 2018 is sort of when that happened. And since then, the development has accelerated considerably even more. So it definitely worked in the sense of providing a foundation for further right. contributions and other companies contributing and helping out. And there's been a lot going on, and we're only accelerating more and more. So it's been good, I think.
So do your committers get status in the foundation like committers do at Apache?
We have maintainers. We don't have committers. As opposed to having like a structure where people are voting on individual commits or releases, we use a maintainer model, and there's a whole document on this on our website. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing we're working with the maintainers and everyone else is everyone really needs to be talking to each other as opposed to like voting on things. We want to drive more consensus out of things, which is, you know, very much the original Apache model. And so it's a little bit slower than some of the other models where people go and vote. But this is kind of how we've always run the project, is getting people talking together.
Right. Well, it's interesting to see you getting those things started, and I'll be watching to see what happens with the foundation. And you might, just a hint, you might on the website want to put a link to that helps people find the incorporation so that they can trust it. Because at the moment, it kind of ends in a, I didn't find a path through to a place where it told me about the incorporation. It made me scratch my head and wonder if it was part of Starburst Corporation or something.
Oh, it's definitely not. I mean, it predates us joining the Starburst company, and it's totally independent.
Right, right. So what is the relationship of Starburst to this project?
So Starburst is a company that has an open core model. So we at Starburst are, we have Presto with a bunch of extensions, connecting to more things, adding really features that are targeted at the larger enterprises. So think things like Kerberos pass-through, which is extremely complicated, and no one in the open source really is ever going to build it because it's crazy complicated. Only the really big enterprises use it. And so that's largely our model is extensions and packaging and support and those sorts of things.
Right. And what percentage of the maintainers work for Starburst, and what percentage are from the wider community?
I think there are 10 or maybe 11 maintainers, and is it 10? I don't know. I lost count. There are 6 that are employees of Starburst. We joined Starburst late last year. So originally Starburst was doing a open core model, and they had 3 maintainers. And then myself and David and Martine joined. So now there's 6.
Right, right. So were you running a company independently before that?
No, we left Facebook and spent about 9 months rebuilding the community and getting it all working again and setting up all new infrastructure and things like that. It was quite a lot of work, and working with, there's a lot of other like Valley companies that actually have teams that work on Presto that we work with. And we did like 4 events around the world, sponsored by different companies to build up the community. And it's really taken off since last year.
Right. So what other products or projects are in this space? You know, is this competing with ClickHouse, for example?
I don't think it competes with ClickHouse. The major things we see when people are looking at Presto is they typically have something like Hive already, and they have a data lake, and they want better performance. And so in open source, that means either some Hive configuration that's faster, something around Spark, possibly it's falling out of my head. Databricks has Cloudera has a fast database for Hive. I can't remember. It's falling out of my head. Or people are buying a commercial thing. They're using, I don't know, Redshift or Snowflake or Teradata or something like that, and they're migrating their data out of their Hive into those to get faster query response times. So there isn't a lot of things like Presto itself. I mean, we focus on performance of the queries. And a lot of the other systems that I mentioned, the Hive and Spark, are more focused on traditional, really big batch jobs that take like hours. We're focused on interactive.
Well, we still have a lot more questions, many more questions. There we go. Randall, use your English. You know, I get irritated when I watch television shows and they get things wrong. My favorite pet peeve now is the use of yourself and myself when it totally doesn't belong, because it's not really reflexive now pronoun. So anyway, enough of that. Anyway, so But I do have an important message before we keep ranting, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Barracuda. Barracuda is the provider of cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions that protect email, networks, data, and applications. Suddenly, you have dozens, hundreds, or maybe thousands of employees working remotely. Each one of them is getting tons of emails every day, making them vulnerable. 91% of all cyber attacks started in email. Spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking. Multiply that by how many employees times how many emails? One click on the wrong email can cost you money, customers, and your reputation. Barracuda research has seen a steady increase in the number of coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since January, and they've observed a recent spike of 667% in this type of attack since the end of February. Get the protection you need for your company with Barracuda Total Email Protection. It includes all-in-one email security, backup and archiving, AI-based protection from spear phishing, account takeover, and business email compromise. An automated incident response that gives you options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. Security awareness training to educate your workforce so your employees can be first line of defense against attacks. So right now, there are new attacks impersonating organizations like the World Health Organization. Attackers utilize domain spoofing and promise information relating to the coronavirus in an attempt to trick users into a phishing scam. Ensure the safety and security of your business with Barracuda. To uncover the threats hiding in your inbox, get a secure, free email threat scan of your Office 365 account, risk-free, at barracuda.com/floss. That's barracuda.com/FLOSS. Barracuda, your journey secured. And we thank Barracuda for their support of Floss Weekly. So I want to start getting into this sort of like the interface that this is. You say it's SQL. Who wants to take that?
So I can sort of answer that a little bit. The interface is SQL in the sense that you have Presto running on your cluster. There is one specific server that's the coordinator, and it exposes an API that you can submit queries to. But most typically, people connect to it either with a command line tool. So we have a Presto CLI. The Presto CLI allows you basically to connect to it and then type your SQL queries. But then more commonly, you use a JDBC driver, which is a Java database connectivity driver. So any Java application can then be used. So typical applications are like DBeaver or Squirrel SQL, which are desktop applications, or then more commonly, very powerful applications like Apache Superset, for example, that on the one hand allows you to connect to Presto and query with writing SQL queries, but then also have like drag and drop facilities to create charts or tables and whatever, and then export them or whatever you want to do. And also with Superset, for example, you can then create dashboards that then some business analyst can just, or like some manager can just look at the report rather than having to know anything about it. And Presto can perform all the very fast queries underneath the hood, completely transparent. And there's lots of applications that can connect to Presto basically via JDBC, but also there's ODBC driver. And then there is various other connectivity tools that support technologies like a native Python client or R and others. So there's lots of ways to connect to it and basically make Presto work for you with the SQL support, with whatever tool you prefer, really. And that can be commercial tools as well.
So you do have one master that then delegates out all the work to various nodes, right?
Yes, we call it the coordinator. It basically receives the queries from the user and then does the whole analysis of just parsing the SQL, figuring out sort of like the subsets, breaking up the query in different segments, like which tables are involved, which fields are involved, what are the different queries, what's actually doing, like is it the top so-and-so query or what are the conditions? And then it breaks it up into many, many tasks and files it out in parallel to all the workers. So say, for example, you have a large query that runs into a table which with a date field or whatever, it then goes out to different different workers and sort of like for different time frames, it asks the different the different workers to take care and contact the database. And if the underlying database supports that, like it's like a HDFS storage which is partitioned or so, then it can be very, very fast and get all the data in parallel from many workers. And then in Presto, they can get aggregated and be much faster than asking sort of one server to do the work.
So this seems like a lot of benefit. Is there? What's the downside of using something like this?
I don't know what a downside. I don't know if there's a downside. Yeah, Dan can maybe chime in.
Downside. Presto is an analytics database, so it's designed for it's optimized for reads, as opposed to something like MySQL, which is optimized for updates and writes. So MySQL, you can like insert a row and do that in, you know, sub millisecond. In Presto and all of these analytic databases, those are much bigger operations because it's going to spend a lot more effort doing writes to make sure the data is optimized. So when you go around to read, we can like do vectorized parallel reads. So everything's crazy fast, right? So there's if you're trying to target a use case that's more like what you would traditionally use a MySQL for, something like Presto is not going to be nearly as fast, and you're better served by something like MySQL. So that the downsides are like you really need to stick to the primary use cases of these things. I also it's a big distributed system. So if you're trying to do a really targeted read of something, then a more targeted system is going to be better at it. So if you're trying to access a lot of data in parallel from something, then the extra work we're doing to divide up the query and spread it out to a whole bunch of machines, that's well worth it, right? But at the end of the day, like you do all this work and then you're targeting a system that can actually return the data in like 5 milliseconds. Well, you just did like, you know, 30 milliseconds of work to do a tiny little query. So it's really a balance between these different ends of the SQL space.
Cool. And I think I know the answer to this because I think I saw it in the on the webpage, but Joju Dancer has asked 2 or 3 times now, can you query different kinds of back-end databases with a single query?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the big use cases. A lot of times people have they'll have a data lake. So they'll have a whole bunch of data in S3 or HDFS, but they'll have dimension data that's stored in their MySQL or their Oracle or something like that. And so they'll have like, I don't know, log data that has like a customer ID, but then they want to like pull in and join that in with like customer data that's stored in a MySQL. And so Presto is a system that allows you to actually join live between, you know, your traditional data lake data sources and all these other data sources like Oracle and MySQL and so on. This is a really big use case for some of the biggest customers we've had in Presto. We did this a lot at Facebook, and some of our people at Starburst, like Comcast, uses this to merge between their Teradata systems and their large HDFS stores and their large object stores. And it's really a game changer for these for people who have these problems. Because in the past, you would have to set up an expensive ETL process to move all of that dimension data into a common place. And then that data is always behind schedule. So like, how often do you run your ETL? Once a day. So then like, oh, I got to wait till tomorrow to process today's log data. And, you know, these processes are expensive. They require a lot of people. And with something like Presto, we're able to do this live. So there's no latency lag on the data updates. And it's just a better experience for everyone. Much more akin to doing data exploration that you need to do if you're going to really build anything, you have to go and dig into the data sets and figure out how they work together.
So I'm fascinated, Dane. You were at Facebook for a long time with this code. Why did Facebook stop using it?
Facebook very much still uses it. Facebook uses tons of open source that they're not involved in. I don't know if that answers your question.
But like with React, you know, it's kind of if it's such a big deal as a piece of software and involved such an investment for them to create, and it's mission critical, I'd have expected them to have had at least one person working on it.
They have a team of like 20 people working on their version of Presto.
So are those people aren't involved in the foundation at all then?
Correct. They are not.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating. So they're basically running a fork of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're running a fork.
Depends on your viewpoint in the world. Yeah. I mean, Facebook has a, when we were at Facebook, we spent a lot of time trying to direct the project so that we were providing a lot of value to Facebook while providing a lot of value to everyone else. And it's a hard job. Like, you know, when you're looking at a feature, it's like, can I widen this out a little bit so that it provides everything Facebook needs and enough that everyone else is getting value out of it? Or, you know, sometimes we would just do projects on the side because we knew everyone else needed it, because we wanted to make sure that the whole time we're providing value for both people. I mean, open source is challenging at any company. But Facebook nowadays has, like, they're running on pretty much custom, everything is custom. Like, they have custom storage, custom metadata access, custom file formats, custom security, custom, like, everything. So it's a much harder thing to balance out.
Yeah. So do you anticipate ever getting them to remerge with your branch, or is it diverging forever now?
I don't know. I go back and forth on that. I mean, right now the code base is, I think we've rewritten more than 20% of the code in the last year. There's like, I don't know, thousands of commits that are divergent. I think the bigger thing is there's just really different targeted use cases. Like, mm-hmm. we're running everything. Almost everyone that's using us is running in some sort of cloud-like environment. And like the installations at Facebook, we had dedicated hardware for everything. And just really different use cases of what we're focused on.
Right. So this is fascinating because, you know, I visit Facebook and I talk to them about their open source work. And it seems that having crucial pieces of software be open source ought to be really good for them. And yet, as you're pointing out, you know, their environment is so so custom that it's very hard to see how general purpose software can work there. You know, the divergence between the two, I would have thought it was in their interest to try and at least harvest your innovation. Do you think that's going to happen? Are they going to be coming into you and, you know, everything you've got is Apache licensed, so presumably they could pick it up and take it if they wanted to?
They absolutely can. And we would encourage them to actually pick up stuff. The thing is that it's a lot of work. So when I joined Facebook, this is like, you know, 7 years ago. It wasn't short after that that Facebook forked off of Hive, and they haven't picked up really any of the benefits from open source. Same thing for the Hadoop installations, the Spark installations. And they have really deep forks because they're integrating with their internal stuff, and they have problems that really no one else has. So they have like a massive fork of Spark where they rewrote the entire shuffle layers in the middle. They had huge people working on it because it was a problem with the networking architecture at Facebook and how it interacted with Spark at scale.
But that has to get expensive eventually. You know, when there is a significant CVE in something that nobody cares much about at Facebook, and they have got to waste their engineers' time on fixing it and rebasing all the fixed code on the changes they've made, surely eventually it becomes more expensive to run a fork than is worth it.
I don't disagree with you. There are a lot of people working on this stuff at Facebook. I mean, there's the data infrastructure team is massive, like well over 100 people.
The place always seems to be getting bigger every time I drive past. So the garden on the roof. Yeah. And I can see where all those people are going.
The reality is there are hardly anyone in the world that runs at their scale. So like when I left Facebook, Presto's running on, I don't know, 20,000 computers or something like that. And last I heard, it's up to 40, 50,000 machines. Like there's hardly anyone in the world that even has that kind of hardware. So you run into problems like just no one else has.
Right. So what does your roadmap look like for the future on Presto? What are the cool things you're going to do next?
So I think the next biggest thing is getting better at doing the sort of federation work we talked about. So right now, like when I explain what we're doing, where we're federating is where we're having a query that spans multiple data stores. So this would be like a S3 data store and a MySQL or Postgres or things like that. So today, where we really started developing that was we have a heavyweight data store in like a data lake, and we want to pull in some small dimension data. And it really, the amount of work we were putting in it really didn't matter that much because we're loading small data sets. So we could just pull the whole data sets in. What we're starting to see a lot more from a lot of people we're talking across the industry is they want to actually use Presto to query and just join like a couple of MySQL and a Postgres and maybe an Oracle because, I don't know, they're a bank and they bought three other banks and they're all using different systems and they can't query across them. And so getting much better at being able to pull out much more targeted data, push more things into those underlying systems. So we don't have to like pull all the data out and do the compute on the Presto side. We can push that into those stores that already are probably optimized for the exact queries they're going to have. So much better federation, push down, that sort of thing. That's a big item on the roadmap we have. I think the other big items are getting much better at caching. So we recently added things to be able to cache data out of the data lakes. So we have a way to cache chunks of data files out of S3 and those sorts of things. That becomes really important when you're dealing with data stores that are overwhelmed. So S3 is pretty good, but you can imagine if you're an on-prem system and you have like an overloaded HDFS, being able to cache the data out of that can offload a lot of work on that. And then some of the other clouds that will rename nameless have really bad object stores that get overwhelmed very quickly.
Hey, we're almost out of time, so we got to keep these answers brief as we go on to the final few minutes. I did have a question from the chat room, though. When are you incorporating blockchain?
I don't see us incorporating blockchain. I don't know. Manfred, do you have any idea of that?
I think we're actually more focused on actually providing value rather than following buzzwords.
And also, let's see. Let me scroll back here because there was a question back here. So what kind of Judge Dancer, again, who's been prolific in questions today, I'll paraphrase. What's your encryption like to your backends? So what are you able to keep data secure while it's coming into the system for processing?
So the answer to that and most questions about how does Presto talk to backends is we're limited by what those backends can do. So we can't solve problems that they haven't solved for themselves. Okay. That said, for most of the backends we talk to, they typically have TLS. They'll have some sort of authentication system. When we talk to the Hive space, it's typically like a Kerberos pass-through kind of design. But yes, it can and is fully encrypted if that's how you have configured your system.
Okay, cool. Go ahead.
And then when traffic is in the cluster, it also can be encrypted. And then also depends on the client tool you're connecting to, right? Like if you're connecting via something, you have to secure that as well, right?
Sure. Good. Well, like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything, this question will be for both of you. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure we cover before we have to let you go?
I just want to mention that anybody interested should join us on the Slack channel. That's where we sit and are basically on all day long. So if you want to contact us. And also the book Presto, the Definitive Guide, is available for free on the Starburst website. So that's a good way to start. Obviously, there's also lots of documentation on the website and we can help anyone out. But that book is available. So make sure you get that copy of that if you want to get started. And then with more questions, reach out to us.
Awesome. Yeah. And Dane, same question.
Absolutely. Join the Slack channel. We have a worldwide community of people that work on Presto. There's pretty much people there all day long, 24/7, to answer any questions you have, to help you out, get the system working. But most importantly, just download it and try it out. It should provide value really quickly to you.
Cool. Well, this has been wonderful. We've got two final questions I have to ask, or my audience gets mad. We'll start with Manfred first. What's your favorite text editor?
That's a long story. I'm sort of a like play with everything. Currently, I'm mostly using Visual Code actually, but when it goes in the deep end, I'm on Vim.
Okay. And what's your favorite scripting language when you have to do something scripty?
Don't really have a favorite, but on the JVM ecosystem, I do a lot with Groovy. Otherwise, with Python, I end up with Python a lot. And I do a lot of bash scripting as well. So I use whatever comes along.
Okay, sure. Sounds good. Dane, same two questions.
So for normal text editing, I use Vim on the command line. I've been using it since the early 90s. But if I'm editing code, it's IntelliJ all the way. There's no other way to really write Java code without a visual editor. It's too complicated. Scripting language. I'm terrible at scripting. So I typically copy a script from someone else. But if I need to do something scripty, I'll write a Java program because I can do it really fast.
Wow. Cool. Well, guys, it's been great having the two of you on. I'm excited. I think we could have gone another half hour at least, maybe another hour. Because I didn't get into any of the technical questions that I really wanted to get into. But, that's life. We do what we can in the time frame that we have and try to come up with a show that at least in an hour can give a highlight of the project we're talking about. So thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Cool. That was, and I just scrolled away from their names. There it is. Manfred Moser and Dane Sundstrom talking to us about Presto. I tell you, their logo should be like a magic hat with a wand. That would be kind of cool, but whatever. Anyway, so what do you think, Simon?
It's fascinating to catch up with what another member of the JBoss diaspora has got up to. The folks who were involved in that project 20 years ago have all gone and done innovative things in the industry and created great technologies. And this, it looks like it's another one that Dane has got it into. I can see how it's going to be very valuable to companies who are dealing with the ever-increasing data sets. And I'll be very interested to see how it evolves as the industry goes forward, and particularly as more and more of the data gets created at the edge of the network, rather than even what this is dealing with is really dealing with multiply centered data rather than edge data. So I'm guessing they've got a future where they're dealing with data where it's being generated too. What did you think, Randall?
Well, this looks fascinating. I don't know anything else in this space that solves it in the way this is solving it. So I imagine they're innovative. They're ahead of the game. And I hope more people look at it. And it's under a liberal license, so it's easy to adopt. And the problem it solves, like I said, is joining various sources data and doing joins with it. I didn't realize it, you know, I was sort of joking at the beginning of the show whether it's a read only or a read write, and they say it writes, and I was sort of amazed. It was like, wait, you can write? It writes slow, it says, but that's okay, you know, it'll work. So I think that this place has a lot of potential for growth, a lot of potential for being used in more places. And, you know, data is everything now. Data warehousing, data analysis is huge now. It's being used everywhere. So my only gripe is that they kept saying MySQL. Okay, if you talk to Monty himself, it's MySQL. Okay, none of this SQL. SQL is SQL, not SQL. So I just cringed every time I heard that, but that's life. I didn't correct them during the show, so now they're just hearing it afterwards. I'm evil. Anyway, so let's talk about, unless you have something further to add, I've got some
upcoming guests. Not really. No, I was going to make reference to Squirrel, but I won't do that.
Okay, good point. Okay, next week, which we've had scheduled for a little while, NetData, which instantly diagnoses slowdowns and anomalies in your infrastructure with thousands of metrics, interactive visualizations, and insightful health alarms. So that's pretty cool. Just added to the schedule between the last time I was on and this week. Last time I was on, I think it was like 2 weeks ago because of my sickness last week. Is WinsDB. WinsDB is a free open source auto machine learning, I think, framework to streamline the use of neural networks. Yeah, sounds like it might be that. Designed to make it super easy for developers to deploy machine learning in their projects. Cool. And also just added, and I should be familiar with this, but I'm not. Aaron brought this project to me. Sysdig, which is best I can tell from looking at their website, because they don't have a nice paragraph of Sysdig is. They just have a lot of things about the attributes of it. The closest I can guess is it's security for containers. So that seems to be the case there. So those are coming up. We don't have a lot more. So if you go to twit.tv/floss, that's the big spreadsheet. And there's a lot of empty slots there. So if you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me. We have a live stream, which we took a couple of questions, particularly from JoJo Dancer, at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays when we're taping the show at live.twit.tv. So you can join in and ask questions and see us behind the scenes and all sorts of wonderful stuff. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter, although that it doesn't get a lot of movement these days. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter, M-E-R-L-Y-N, but I don't also use Twitter all that often. I got enough sleep last night, so I don't know why I'm yawning this morning. You can join us, though, at the forum at twit.community. Yes, that's the actual URL, twit.community. And there is a separate section, well, a section for Floss Weekly, and some sort of autobot automatically creates a thread for every new article we push. So that's good. And so my plugs are very simple. I actually got work. I started work on Monday. And
hooray!
What's amazing?
Yay, right.
What's actually cool is I'm coding in both Perl and Flutter. I actually got a professional Flutter job. So I've been talking about Flutter for years now, and you know, I've had people on like Eric Seidel and all these other guys, and I'm a Flutter Google developer expert, and I had all this going on, but I hadn't had any commercial experience. So They know I don't have any commercial experience, but they know I'm a GDE, so I have access to resources that most people don't. And I'm also really good at the Googles, really good at the Googles. So I'm looking forward to my first payable. It's probably going to be about a month down from now. And I think that means I'm going to run out of money before then. So that's going to be the annoying part, is how to manage my money before I get my first check from the company. But the rate is reasonable and it's all remote, which is nice. So, and that's going to be good. And these guys are great. I've had a great set of conversations with them already. So I won't tell the name of the company because I don't know if I have the rights to do that. But the good thing is I did get work, and that's handy. So right after this, I get to go back to I'm trying to get my first Git archives pull down because I got to get SSH to work. I got to get the VPN to work. Lots and lots of moving parts. You know, onboarding is always crazy. Anything you want to plug, Simon?
Not massively. Just congratulations on getting that job there, Randall. I wanted to thank the, I plugged my Patreon feed on the show a little while ago, and I wanted to thank the listeners and viewers who have signed up to that, which is extremely helpful in these straitened times where all of our income that involved people being able to travel has gone away from the household. Apart from that, I could list to you all the conferences that I won't be going to over the next 6 months. And I can encourage you to follow me on Twitter and anywhere else where you find that WebMink exists. Those are all me. You'll be able to see my complete lack of commits on GitHub, but I'm there on GitHub sponsors, so you're welcome to join in there. And apart from that, I'm just enjoying life, completely locked down, wondering whether I'll ever want to go out again. It's really very lovely having no visitors and having no reason to go anyplace.
Yeah, well, I have one errand to run right after this, and then I'm going to be back down to trying to get SSH and VPN working, something about a ton device that it doesn't like. And so I have to figure out how it's different from the other ones that work. It's probably because it has ton device, ton instead of just ton. We'll see. Anyway, I'll figure it out because that's what I have to do in order to be able to get to work. So anyway, hey guys, or hey Simon, thanks once again for joining me on this show. I think it's, we haven't been like you and me for like quite a while, right?
It's been a while now. Yes, all the recent times I've rushed onto the show have been to stand in when you've not been able to make it. So it hasn't been you or me for several weeks now.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for jumping in. And I guess there's nothing else to say, but we'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.